listeners, and welcome to Garden Planet. You're listening to Selena and Karen.
Hey, guys.
Okay, so basically, I've done it to myself again. I took upon a subject with full gusto and then got halfway through it going, why do I just choose to do this? What? But well, anyway.
Yes, tell the listeners what you've chosen.
The subject of the day is ecosystems. I felt like the urge to get all science-y again on us.
Uh-oh.
But don't worry, listeners, because it's going to be broken up with an interesting plant of the week, which we will reveal in time.
Mm-hmm.
And Selena's going to...
Yes, that's my job today.
To what, break the monotony? So I was thinking maybe we could cue them in with a song about your plant of the week and see if they can guess what it is.
Oh, okay. What's...
Well, we'll figure it out as we go.
All right.
In our usual style. Always seems to work out. Works for us. So let's start. Ecosystems. Right. Do you know what an ecosystem is? I mean, because you hear it all the time. And when I Googled it, they actually use it in the IT world. They classify IT ecosystem. I'm thinking...
I had not heard of that.
IT or computers.
I know systems, but ecosystems...
It just doesn't seem to, like, correspond at all, because eco is all about biology. I don't feel like computers are not biology in any way. But then, have you ever looked at a computer like motherboard, like the parts of a, opened up the,
well,
I don't even know what to call it.
No, sorry.
Hard drive? I don't know, the box that the computer comes into.
Yeah.
I know, my son would be appalled.
All that circuitry and loops and things.
When you look at it.
Yeah.
And I was looking at Maximus's. He's got this beast of a thing in his room, being like 13, so he needs the gigs or whatever, the power. So I was looking at it and I was like, man, that actually does look like some sort of, like the way it all kind of fits together.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got like your mountain range of, I don't know, whatever the green part of it is called. And then it sort of all loops around. And then you've got your cooling system. That kind of looked a bit like maybe a reservoir. You know, like it does actually look, it's a system that has to all fit together in order for it to work. So maybe that's the theory behind that.
Okay.
But yeah. So I'm just going with the biological definition today.
Right. Yeah.
It's an ecosystem is defined as a biological community of organisms and the physical environment.
Okay. Yes.
So that's the system. Community of organisms and, you know, within its, yeah, and it has to be in an environment, a physical environment.
Right. Yep.
And this is controlled by external and internal factors. The external factors control the complete structure of an ecosystem and are not able to be controlled themselves. The most obvious and important being that of climate.
Uh-huh. Yep.
It is the climate that determines the biome in which the ecosystem exists. This is because the rainfall patterns and seasonal temperatures influence photosynthesis, and thereby the water and energy available to the ecosystem.
Okay, yep.
The internal factors not only control the ecosystem, but two are controlled by it. So unlike the climate, which we can really...
No, nothing we can
do. We have no control over that. The internal ones, that's the difference. They, So internal factors include things like shading, root competition, decomposition, and the types of species present within the ecosystem.
Mm-hmm.
Down under, here in Aotearoa, we have two major ecosystems, both being characterised by endemic flora and fauna, which have evolved, having been in near isolation from the rest of the world for a long time. The main islands of New Zealand span two biomes, the north being subtropical and the south being temperate, and this is further complicated by the large mountainous areas above the tree line.
Yep.
So, yeah. Basically, islands with mountains, it just adds a lot more factors. So that's our ecosystem.
That's quite simple, two different types of
biomes.
Biomes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is under threat. Okay. Did you know that?
The climate change?
Well, that would probably be the main thing, I suppose. But probably, I'll get into it.
Okay.
A report named Environment Aotearoa was recently compiled. It was in 2019, which was last year, just so you know.
Yep.
using data from Statistics New Zealand and the Environment Ministry. The report presents a sobering summary differing starkly from the pristine landscape promoted in our Pure New Zealand marketing campaign.
Well, that is a bit of a greenwash, I feel.
Yeah. It reveals that almost two-thirds of New Zealand's, mm-hmm. ecosystems are under threat of collapse.
Okay.
And yep. over the last 15 years, the extinction risk has worsened for 86 species. New Zealand is now considered one of the most invaded countries in the world, with 75% of animal and plant species having gone extinct since colonisation.
75%? Yeah. Well, two-thirds, yeah.
That is disgusting.
What?
The once vibrant bird life has fared particularly badly, with 90% of seabirds and 80% of shorebirds threatened with extinction. So it's a bit gloomy.
Oh.
I wasn't expecting it to take this turn. I was just going to talk about ecosystems. And then, of course, when you press Google, it comes up with stuff like this. And I was like, well, I have to mention that because it's worth knowing.
It sounds terrible. What can we do?
As sobering as it is to hear such sad news, I guess for many the question is, well, how does this impact us? What's the big deal? So what? I'm still alive. Life's great, you know. Why is it so that the human race must be part of a healthy, functioning ecosystem? So it's not let's have one of those options. It's we have to have one. Do you know why that is?
Please tell.
So you don't?
Not really.
Okay. Oh, I'm so pleased I brought this talk because I remember we had a discussion and you're like, oh, ecosystem, boring. Yeah. I was like, no, I think there's something in it because obviously gardening is a part of it.
Yeah.
So we need healthy ecosystems simply because they perform the six following functions. I thought you might have got one of them. I probably wouldn't have if I'd been.
Photosynthesis, giving us oxygen to breathe. Would that be one?
Yep.
Yep.
Yes.
Yay.
You got one out of six.
Yay.
Well done. 11%. Is that 11? My math is... One, they clean our water. Two, purify our air. So I would put that under that. Yeah. Three, maintain our soil. Four, they regulate the climate. That's a big one for me. Mm. Because, when the climate's all over the place, it really puts everything out, eh?
Yeah.
And you can see that just by watching the news with the amount of chaos going on
exactly.
in the world. So five, they recycle nutrients. And six, and this is a pretty important one, they provide us with food.
Yay.
So, yep, it's that simple. We could not survive without these ecosystem services. They are what we call our natural capital. And an interesting side fact, it is biodiversity, which is the key indicator of the health of an ecosystem.
Mm.
So I thought that was really cool. So
the more
going on,
the more community, the more meaning biodiversity, meaning different kinds of plants and animals.
And as that
deteriorates,
it's a sure sign that the ecosystem's not doing well. So when you think of the little microsystem in your compost.
Yes.
For that to work, you need biodiversity.
Yeah.
I feel like for our system that we live in, in the community, in our city.
Yes.
I feel like biodiversity of people.
Exactly.
Is really important.
Yeah.
For it to work.
Yeah.
And it's strange though because, we say that, but then I feel like, but in the same breath. I'm getting a bit political. the government kind of wants everyone to, oh, I don't know.
I don't know.
I feel quite torn because sometimes I'm like, oh, I feel free to be myself.
Yes.
But then, like, often in my day, especially working in the education sector,
yeah.
I feel quite constrained to be, I'm like, oh, I better behave myself. Oh, you know. So, like, yeah, feel like I can't truly, like, I've got to behave myself and follow the rules and, you know, that kind of thing. So, I don't know. It's, maybe that's how nature's feeling out there as well.
Maybe, thinking of diversity of people, we all sort of have our own little niche. I mean, in my experience, sort of being kind of like a minority in a big majority of Pākehā or, you know, you know, you feel like you kind of have to fit in somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You need to be...
And yeah. Like with gardening, you kind of have to fit in plants somewhere in your garden, but where they like to be.
Yeah.
You don't just have one type of plant.
Yeah.
You know?
And, like, you know, if, like, back in the day, like, with, well, I can't say cottage gardening, but it's a lot harder, let me put it this way, to have a garden that's only got one species in it. I find, from my experience, so say if you just want, like, roses and that's it.
That's it. Yeah.
It's really, I feel like it's a lot more hard work than if you've got a whole bunch of stuff working together.
Yeah.
And helping each other out, like companion plants.
Yeah.
And I feel like it kind of just takes care of itself.
It is possible to,
you know,
grow a community of plants. But I think one way to look at it is, like, layering or having a triad, they call it a triad or trio, of plants that get along together.
Yeah, so at least three.
Yeah. And then you kind of plant in threes and then it sort of, you know, all flows together.
Oh, cool. So I thought, well, and to answer your question earlier, I do have some ideas about how we as the human race can... you know, help restore the balance. But I'm going to sort of bring it back to flora with it being a gardening show.
Yeah.
But should we maybe do that after we'll just lighten things up a bit?
Okay.
With plant of the week.
Go to our plant of the week.
On the first day of Christmas, my true love gave to me a bouquet calling upon the tree. On the second day of Christmas, my true love gave to me two kumana and a bouquet going up on the tree.
I wonder what the plant of the week could be. That's a little quay there.
It's not kumara, Karen.
And it's not a pukeko, because a pukeko's fauna, not flora.
So, it's ponga.
It's the old ponga tree.
Yeah.
And I hear that you've got one in your garden. Is that a rumour?
I did have one, but, it didn't sort of thrive in my garden.
It fried. Yeah.
So I'm not very good at growing them, but maybe other gardeners have more success than I have, because our punga trees like to be in a community together.
Ah, yes, they do.
And they prefer...
Did you just have one?
I had, actually...
The lone punga?
I had two or three.
Okay.
They're quite expensive to buy from the garden centre, like at least $30 for a small one. And, where I had it was round the side of my house where it was supposedly shadier, but next door neighbours had sort of cut down their big camellia that was shading my part of
and
so it didn't like that removal of the shade.
Your micro ecosystem was compromised.
When you cut down one thing, it compromises everything else.
It changes everything.
So my poor pungus didn't like that. And they might thrive in your garden. Well, let's find out what the punga provides for us. Well, did you know, Karen, that it is actually illegal to send tree ferns overseas from New Zealand because they are native to our country and very treasured.
Oh, I did not.
Yeah.
And another thing I've never seen is a pukeko in a punga tree. Have you ever seen? I didn't think they could get up that high.
No,
they can fly. They can, actually. I just always see them walking around on the ground, though. They're so cute. Right, so, yeah, two fun facts there.
Yep.
What else?
They are very rare in the garden world, or actually on the planet. So they only exist in New Zealand, the pungas. They are very own native.
That's really interesting because I always feel like I see them everywhere.
Australia does have tree ferns, but they're not the same ones as our punga ferns. So we have the right environment for them because we have wet climate and nice and moist and
so
damp.
They like that.
They love it.
Yeah.
The Māori used to use, or they still do, use the pungas for building, like their pars, their huts.
Yes. Yep. We had a punga fence around our pool when I was a child. Mum was trying to go all like on the native.
Yeah.
So rather than having a metal.
Yeah.
It felt a bit like.
You were in the past?
Yes, it did. I don't know how. I don't like. I don't really. I think it was like a thing of the 90s, punga fences. I think everyone.
The koru, which is the little. When the punga grows, the ferns coming out the top. The koru is a famous, of course, famous symbol.
The koru. And do all ferns have that? Curling out.
It tends to be the tree ferns that have that.
Yes.
It's more noticeable with the tree ferns.
Yeah, so cute.
Yeah.
Especially when they're just starting out and they're green and they're just
beautiful.
It's lovely to watch.
Actually, did you know they're edible? But I personally.
I think I did actually. I've never eaten one
they're
myself.
They're a bit hairy myself.
But if you cooked it up,
yeah,
or steamed
possibly.
It, I think.
Yeah, the new shoots might be tasty.
Yeah.
You can use the leaves or the shoots as a healing poultice, and they also use the gel in one of the tree ferns, a mamaku, as a kind of a soothing salve.
Or
you could use it as a hair gel. They use it in creams.
I don't know,
and
man. Like most. Sort of saps and gels, as you put it, that come out of plants. Yeah, no, I wouldn't want to be putting that on my hair just because they're really, like,
it's very sticky.
And, you know, like, I have enough hair troubles as it is.
Okay. Maybe your hair is not the type that needs it.
Yeah, maybe someone that wants a firm hold forever.
Okay. Now, there's two kind of different species of punga or tree ferns, like they're two different Latin names, and I'll just let you know what they are. So cyathae are the silver fern and the black fern, and they're our biggest ones. And then there are the other little ones that belong to the Dickinsonia family, and they are your wekiponga ferns. They're a bit smaller, and they can cope with a drier climate. So you've got two different types.
So you obviously didn't go for that one, the smaller one. You went for the bigger in your garden.
I had actually had the smaller one, but it didn't sort of...
I think it
prefers the shade.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, yeah. Now, if you're growing the big one, the cyathae, which is your silver fern and your black fern, they can get up really high, like 30 metres.
Oh, wow.
Well, they're in the forest. So it's a forest tree.
I don't know if I've ever looked up. I just noticed them all along the roadside. They're just everywhere.
Yeah.
But, up as well. Okay.
And, like, their fronds can reach up to 5 to 6 metres long.
Oh, yes.
They can get really, really big.
I love lying underneath them and looking up and seeing the light through them. It's so nice.
And even looking down on them, they make a beautiful umbrella pattern.
Yeah.
They're just so lovely. But you do need the right conditions and eco-environment for them to thrive.
Oh, okay.
And where you might see some really nice, in the forest, of course, but if you're ever down Rotorua way and you're going to the redwood forest, because the redwoods grow really, really tall, all the tree ferns love being
under
there.
Yeah.
And it's lovely just to walk through them and see.
I noticed that, like, I just was down there last weekend and we went on the luge. Have you been on the luge before?
Oh, not for a long time, but
and
yes.
One of the tracks you can choose to take is the scenic track, which is normally where the young kids and the older people go, yeah. But I love going on that track just because you're, like you say, you've got the big tall trees and then underneath them the ferns, and I'm just like cruising, looking at all the nature. It's so pretty.
Yeah.
All works so nicely together.
So, such an iconic plant for us Kiwis.
Mm.
I'm sure the Kiwi birds love them too. Provide shelter, and the silver fern is our national emblem.
Mm,
why is it called silver fern? Because the underside of the leaves are silvery colour.
I was going to answer that.
Oh, well, you can share.
Okay, but I was honest. And they are actually silver. Like, especially because I work with kids, and I was actually just having this conversation about the silver fern this week. And they were like, is it actually silver? Because a lot of them hadn't been into the bush. And I was like, yes!
Yeah, look underneath.
Yeah.
The Māori used to, or they still do, I think it's only used to, but they still do, use that as a tracker, like a turn it over and so you know, like Hansel and Gretel putting their crumbs along.
Oh, that's cool.
So they know where they've been and, you know.
And it would be easier to see if the light's falling as well.
Yeah. So that's our lovely ferns.
Oh, wow. I learned a few things. Thanks for that, Selena. So, well, since we, because obviously the punga thrives in the forest, that's its preferred place, I just wanted to, you know how I said I was going to get on to ways of how we can help our ecosystems and help, like, plants like the punga.
Definitely interested.
Yes, so let's talk about a few of those ways. So the aim of forest regeneration is to restore and maintain ecosystem health by facilitating natural regeneration of flora, particularly that of indigenous flora. This is usually achieved by selectively reducing the competitive interaction with invasive species or by mitigating negative influences such as weeds or erosion. Management of factors such as fire and herbivory, depending on the ecosystem being regenerated, likewise can be just as important. So there's a couple of methods that I just wanted to bring up that I thought were quite cool.
Yeah.
The first one is the Bradley method.
Oh.
In the 1960s, Joan and Elaine Bradley developed a series of weed control techniques. Their method urges a naturalistic minimal disturbance approach that encourages the native vegetation to self-re-establish. The Bradleys used their method to successfully clear weeds from a 40-acre reserve in the Sydney Harbour National Park. I got this from an Australian website, and because I just thought, of all places that you're going to restore, you know, vegetation, Australia would probably be one of the more challenging ones. Oh, so I thought this would be quite, like, you know,
what
good one.
Hey?
Yeah. So, they managed to, 40 acres is quite, you know, a lot of area to restore. It probably burnt down, I'd say.
Oh, well.
I know, I'm already getting anxious just thinking about what happened last summer in Australia. I know.
Aussies.
It's already making me. We were watching the weather last night and Pierre was going, oh, look at the hot spots, because they have it on the in Australia. I was like, can you please not say, I don't want to know. It was, just after a period of consecutive follow-up treatments, each diminishing in time requirement, they demonstrated that maintenance required in order to remain weed-free was only needed once or twice a year, and for the most part in vulnerable areas like creeks and roadsides. So their method worked. There are three main principles to it. Secure the best area first. That's number one. Two, minimise disturbance to the natural conditions, so don't really disturb the soil too much.
Yep.
And three, don't overclear. So that's their three principles. The Bradley method focuses on facilitating native plant recruitment from the natural seed bank compared to that of selectively planting seedlings or sowing seeds. Weeding a little at a time in the direction of the forest towards the weeds allows the natives, under their favourable conditions, to truly flourish. Native seeds and spores are already in the ground, yeah. And the natural environment seems to favour the plants that have evolved within it.
Okay.
Through this technique, the balance is gradually tipped back towards regeneration, although in order for this equilibrium to remain this way, it is crucial that the required follow-up work is carried out. And yeah. This, apparently, according to this article, is where things... So you start off with a hiss and a roar, yeah. And then, you know, the community kind of forgets about it, and then it's sort of the weeds start taking over again. Whereas if you actually... It's like having a garden. If you do it properly...
Yeah.
Every year becomes a little
more
easier.
And more. Yeah.
And yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if you just keep at it. So that's where often the downfall.
So places, if I interrupt you, places like Tiritiri Matangi, which was regenerated forest from bare paddocks.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like that, or Rotorua Island.
Yeah,
those sorts of
I did a bit of tree planting out on Motuhi for a while here. I don't know if they use this particular technique. I just remember sticking plants in paddocks.
But then
I guess the bush was right next to the paddock, so maybe...
The birds would have brought the seeds over and
colonised it. We went seed collecting and all that on the island, and then, they grew them in a... So, they didn't really use this approach.
Oh, okay.
We grew them in a nursery and then, stuck them in, PVC bags and then... grow them and then stuck them in the ground. So that's just a different way. It seems to work. Maybe both work.
I think it might work in different areas.
They required volunteers, extensive.
That's true.
Yeah, like being shipped over with spades and whatnot. Yeah, every weekend.
Okay.
Whereas the Bradley method maybe might not be so...
Labour intensive.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Might kind of go with nature a little more. Another thing to bear in mind is that some weed species can actually be an important habitat for native fauna. So it's important to take this into consideration. So a possible solution is to not clear invasive species until adequate habitat alternatives
nurse plants. So it might not be a native plant, but it's a really good plant to shelter.
Yeah, like things like blackberry. There are certain animals that just thrive in amongst the blackberry. And, you don't want, go ripping that up. Because then it takes away their home.
And when you get the canopy trees, as you're thinking of a forest, eventually growing up and shading that area, then those weeds will die off because they don't have enough light.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I just thought I'd just quickly touch on one of the more modern forest regeneration practices. And it's a notable deviation from the Bradley sisters' method. It is modelled on the pioneering work of John Stockard, and rather than minimal disturbance, it is the appropriate disturbance approach that is applied. The reasoning behind this is because many plant communities, especially plants within Australia, don't know if it would apply so much here, require some level of agitation to trigger germination. From long buried seed banks.
Oh.
So, I don't know, something worth looking into maybe over here, but it'd be pretty hard to go out. We've got a lot more mountainous sort of, rainforest.
Of Aussie plants, they tend to want that fire to start them.
That's right. Yeah. So that was interesting. But a lot more can be done in a short space with that method. So,
Karen, really interesting and sort of makes me think a bit more about what we can do.
Yeah, and our ecosystems and, exactly what's going on there in the world, definitely.
All right, gardeners, that's what we've got time for today. But, lovely to learn a bit more about our ecosystems.
Yeah, keep that in mind, guys.
Happy gardening, everyone.
Ka kite.
On the second day of Christmas, my true love came to me. Two kumara and a puke coming up on the tree. On the third day of Christmas, my true love came to me. Three
flags. Well, thanks for listening, everyone. That's all we have time for. Come back next week for more great gardening tips at Garden Planet. You can find us on Facebook on our Garden Planet Facebook page, or email us at gardenplanetfm@gmail.com if you want to ask us anything about gardening. Happy gardening, everyone, and we'll be back next week.